You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
145 workers at the Kawerau factory that manufactures Purex toilet paper have been locked out for 3 weeks after their strike and rejection of a 3% pay rise. The company is also threatening to take legal action against 67 individual employees, as well as the union they belong to, for the union's actions. Today I spoke to John Crocker, Secretary of Unite Union, about the dynamics of the situation and the implications it might have on other cases similar to this in the future. I started by asking what the logic of a corporation is when they put a lockout in place.
It's quite psychological. It's a very heavy-handed tactic to try and get the workers to cede to their terms. They're effectively preventing them from working. They're taking a big loss on their books just to try and bend the workers to their will.
And the company is not only going after the pulp and paper workers union itself, which is to be expected, but has also named 67 individual staff members in legal action for damages. Is naming individuals a common occurrence in these situations?
No, it's not. Normally, it's not normal to go after workers in this situion anyway. I mean, the basis of their legal case is that there was a deficiency in the strike notice, and it was out by an hour. They might have started an hour early relative to the strike notice. So it's very technical anyway. Normally the company would go after the union as an entity. If there's a mistake like that, it will normally lay with the union anyway, with the union official perhaps. But also the union is typically going to have some funds, which the company will be looking to smash, will be looking to attack the architecture of the union. Going after individual workers for damages is quite unusual. And again, heavy-handed. This is a very aggressive tactics from this company.
Well, you touched on it there. Some have called the legal action using a legal loophole as the grounds. The strike started an hour later than its scheduled time. So you've kind of answered it. But in your opinion, is that a common type of detail that employers who are in negotiations with unions or employees, is that common that they take issue with that? Or does it seem like they're kind of exploiting that piece of information?
Well, I think they are exploiting it, but it's unfortunately very common. The law hasn't materially changed in the black letter law in the statute, but over time the case law has gone more and more in favor of precise notification and ballot requirements in order to have a strike, or in this case a lockout, legal. Well, it was the strike being sued over. So it's very disappointing that the courts have moved further and further and further in this direction, where small deficiencies in a strike notice or potentially in a ballot can then render a strike unlawful. And as soon as something's unlawful, the lawful strikes give you all kind of protection against being sued for things that you can only be sued for. And that legal protection is very important, and that it can be taken away on a technicality when something's out by an hour. This hasn't been proven yet, but this is the basis of their case. They feel confident running it. So that progression in the case law over several years is very disappointing. It's very bad for workers generally.
And this was all in reaction to workers who had worked through COVID and made the company a massive profit, simply asking for a pay rise in response to the cost of living crisis at a time when inflation was rampant. Was there any other feasible way for them to go about advocating for themselves?
I mean, you could get really creative, but when you put it like that, I mean, that is basically the situation. This company has made a stack of money. They're very profitable. I've got a figure that they made $330 million in the first half of 2022. I mean, that's accurate. Then they could easily afford a pay rise. And the workers need it. A lot of workers do. The cost of inflation is rampant. And we're seeing quite a variation across employers. Some employers are realizing this. They're putting realistic offers on the table. Occasionally, unions have taken strike action to move them to their position. But some employers are taking different positions, and they're putting very meager offers on the table. And, you know, obviously companies... Some companies might be struggling in this time. This is not an example of a company that is struggling. It's doing fine. But you're going through collective bargaining. So, I mean, that's the terms and conditions for their employment. That's their pay rate. They're going to show up and say, we need a real pay rise. Inflation's massive. If we don't get something realistic, then we're moving backwards. And there's no reason workers should be sitting up and chinning a pay cut when a company's making millions and millions of dollars.
And what precedent does this set for other corporations? Is it realistic that other companies will see this behaviour play out and maybe think that they'll follow suit? Or do you think that the public reaction has been negative enough that they'll see this behaviour as damaging to their companies?
I'm hoping that there's not much precedent here. Obviously, any corporation could try this in any major union negotiation, and they don't. Because, when workers take strike action, they're going out without their wages for some period to try and, to try and make their point, to try and argue their position. Industrial action is basically hurting both parties, because the workers don't get paid, they don't get their livelihood, and then the company doesn't have workers to make money. So it's an option of last resort, and in this case, the company has come very heavy-handedly down. I mean, can you name a company that would choose to not operate for 3 weeks and not make any money? It takes a particular attitude to embark on this behaviour. So I don't think it's going to get set a precedent. I think most employers want good relationships with the workforce, with their unions, and they actually want to be in business. They don't want to shut their doors for a period of time. I mean, they must have lost millions if those figures I quoted earlier were correct. To shut people up for 3 weeks, that's got to be expensive. They've got to be taking a hiding on this.
Yeah, and we have seen other companies from ranging sizes and international and domestic be more passively resistant to workers unionising. Does this behaviour suggest, and in your experience as a union advocate, are companies generally threatened by the unification of their staff?
Yes, initially they are. Unions do tend to improve paying conditions, they do tend to improve wages, and that is a direct cost to the company. So there's an initial hesitance, because if the staff are unionising, often it's symptomatic that there are problems that the company doesn't know about, they might not be happy with. They think, oh, if we can solve this, go away, then we won't have to deal with the union. It does give those employees more bargaining power, which isn't something that companies naturally want. However, that's kind of an initial reaction. Once the union's established, once it's negotiated a few collectives, it's got delegates, it's got a relationship with the company, they tend to calm down a bit and have a more mature relationship where they see the upsides of having a union. Here's someone that can help us solve problems. Here's someone who can improve health and safety. Here's someone who can make sure we're having less legal hookups because the workers are represented. So I think it's kind of a question of maturity. Particularly smaller firms, particularly firms that don't have a union, tend to be resistant. Larger firms who've dealt with unions for years are fairly relaxed about it. They're fine. They get on with them. This is unusual because we've got a company and union that have had an existing relationship for a very long time, and the company has just, kind of flipped out a bit.
Yeah, and it seems to be a trend right now that workers are advocating for the appropriate remuneration for their valuable work. Firefighters, nurses, all sorts of healthcare workers, and now essential workers who provide products that we simply need every day. And you touched on this there, but is unionising the best way that we can change the dynamics of companies holding the absolute power in these situations?
In my view, it absolutely is. It's right in the purposes of the Employment Relations Act to recognise the inherent inequality of power, and that's just, it's I wouldn't say it's simple economics, but typically work is very important to people. It's their livelihood. It can be how they're paying rent next week, it can be how they're putting food on the table. And, businesses obviously need their workers, but they don't necessarily need an individual worker. If they lose one, they can possibly replace one. Maybe not as easily these days as a tight labour market, but that, to fix or remedy that inequality of power, the best way to go about that is for workers to come together, to organise, get plenty of workers into the union, get everybody on the same page, and get everybody educated. I mean, sometimes when I'm training people, I talk about the three N's of union strength: numbers, knowledge, and nerve. And if workers are united and organised, then they have that. They equalise that power relationship, and that can go a long way to improving things. And, we're talking about collective bargaining, which is obviously very important. That's your pay, your terms and conditions. But it can be other things as well. It can be about fairness. It can be about fair processes. It can be about health and safety. It can be about improving or eliminating things like bullying and harassment. So there's a lot of things unions, the presence of a union and workers being together can really do to improve a workplace.
And is there a way for people who aren't directly involved with strikes and situations like this to help show solidarity with workers? Is boycotting a company going to help, or would that realistically just take potential wages away from workers?
Well, it's tricky to talk about boycotts. Encouraging one is something you can get in trouble for. But look, consumers can be ethical with their purchases, and I totally recommend that, whether you're looking at things like, you know, supply chains, and whether there's any, the darkest side of it would be human slavery, in somewhere overseas in a supply chain. But people can make those decisions. You know, people buy free range, for example, for an ethical reason. And if you see a company is treating its workers badly, then you could choose not to purchase their products if you wanted to. You could support the workers directly. There will be a fund available because these people are locked out. If you go to the CTU website, together.org.nz, you'll be able to have that opportunity to donate. And I think the other thing is, we're seeing a change in legislation coming up, the fair pay agreements coming into effect towards the end of this year, which is going to allow unions to negotiate for much broader groups of employees that we've been able to historically. For example, our union is going to be looking at hospitality workers. So you can actually support a fair pay agreement without necessarily joining a union if you just want to see what it's all about. So when that opportunity comes up, we totally recommend people do that. But yeah, voting with your wallet as a consumer is effective. It's not going to deprive these workers of anything because they're already locked out. The company's already not making money. They're burning through money to beat down these workers. And again, the other option is to donate to these workers.
That was me speaking to John Crocker, Secretary of Unite Union, about the dynamics of the Kawerau Purex factory union workers' lockout and the company's threat of taking legal action against individual workers as well as the union.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.